tonight's video is a first-hand story about what this police officer encounters while working on the night shift and what his actions are during these occurrences. Stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss tonight's video. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up, and tell a friend. Now, let's get spooky. I'm a former police officer. There's one call my partner and I took that I will never forget. I'm Jay Miles, and I want to share with you a story that stuck with me for years. I joined the force many decades ago. It was my redemptive way of giving back to society. When I was younger, in my mid-20s, I committed petty crimes in a desperate attempt to fit in. The culture at the time was one that admired bad boys, and having a record was cool to most people. I grew out of that. I was partnerless for some of the 911 calls that I responded to, and I am just thankful that whatever being exists out there, that I had a partner for this call in particular. Our police cruiser was parked in a dark alleyway, tucked between its brick walls as to catch a speeding driver. It was around 1 a.m. when we received the dispatch. Someone called about a woman who was walking the streets barefoot with her baby while murmuring things to herself. That's all we were told. We arrived at the scene. My partner, Rob, and I were on the edge the moment that we got there. Not least because Cinder Valley was a notoriously bad neighborhood. After circling the area a few times, the woman was nowhere to be found, so we decided to park the cruiser and knock on some doors. The 911 caller was anonymous, so we weren't able to speak with them directly. Most folks were asleep at this hour, and we had to settle for whoever happened to be walking the streets that night. "You see that?" said Rob. "Someone disappeared behind a wooden gate by a house, and we just missed them." Rob and I jogged over to see if we could get to this person, our possible suspect. I could see folks in their homes peeking through curtains, staring curiously as two cops running around in their neighborhood. It looked like the suspect entered someone's backyard through an open gate, so we flipped on our flashlights and followed. The backyard was pitch black, and we couldn't see anything that wasn't within the narrow beams of our flashlights. I noticed my partner's light was shaking mildly. "You okay?" I asked him. "I'm fine." "It's okay to be scared, man," I said, chuckling. "Screw off." A rusty swing set moved at the wind, and the trees around us sounded their leaves. My body shivered, not at the cold breeze, but at the atmosphere. If I was unsettled, I would only imagine how much more my partner was. "Excuse me, sir." The homeowner suddenly opened her backyard door. "Sorry, ma'am," I said. "We'll be off your property in no time. We didn't mean to scare you. My partner and I are looking for a woman who was reported..." "Officer, I can't hear too well. Would you mind coming inside?" I went inside to speak with the homeowner, while Rob continued searching the backyard. I explained that we were looking for a woman who was behaving strangely and walking around the neighborhood with a baby in hand. While talking with the homeowner, Rob screamed from outside. "You okay? What happened?" I asked. It looked as if he had witnessed a ghost appear right before his very eyes, then vanish into thin air. "I saw her." "The woman? What did she look like?"
"She..."
"Come on, Rob, talk." He took a moment and caught his breath, with his hand over his heart.
She ran up the wall, right in front of me. She ran up the wall, Jay, like an animal.
He pointed at the two-story house. I didn't know what to make of that. Rob didn't have a history of mental illness that I was aware of, and he certainly wasn't on drugs. I knew him, and I knew him for a comfortable amount of time to be able to say with confidence that he would never make things up, especially when it was serious, like police work. Well, I began awkwardly. Did you see which way she went? After she climbed the wall?
The bushes over the metal gate there, he said, flashing his lights at it. I saw them moving.
With our guns drawn, we hopped over the gate and searched the next door neighbor's property.
Wait, Rob said. I heard you call for backup. Shouldn't we wait for them?
No, we could do this just us two. This backyard was even bigger than the other, but it was just as dark. We aimed our flashlights at the wooden shed sitting at the corner of the yard, and before we took another step towards it, we heard someone crying. It sounded like a baby.
Police!
I knocked down the door of the shed and we entered inside. The woman was not there. But there was a baby. A plastic one. Rob pointed his light on the ground of the shed.
The hell is this?
A mechanical baby doll that could play recorded sounds, placed there by someone for the purpose of luring people, was not something that sat right with me. Not a moment after that, our ears rang at a blood-curdling, high-pitched scream coming from the first house whose backyard we searched. As I dashed back to the other house, I noticed Rob wasn't following. He wasn't even moving.
Let's go! What the hell are you doing?
I yelled. Rob's eyes widened as he glared at me, his mouth agape.
I just can't, Jay. Sorry.
I didn't have time to argue with him, so I continued on and hopped over the gate and entered the old woman's house.
What's wrong?
I asked her.
I saw her. She was right there.
The old woman pointed outside to her backyard, at a spot on the ground that was just by the glass door.
She was just there, just standing and looking at me, and I think she smiled.
Okay, which way did she...
Another scream. Rob's. By the time I made it back over to the shed, Rob was nowhere to be found. The plastic baby was gone too. I called out to him and looked everywhere, but he was simply gone. You know, it was like this mystery woman could smell fear. It's something that she seemed to prey on, and Rob had plenty of it that night. When backup finally arrived, I explained to my higher-ups at least a few hundred times what had transpired. This all took place decades ago, and Rob hasn't been found since. It's a cold case. When I think back on this night, it shivers my spine like nothing else. That mysterious woman, was she playing a game with the two of us? And it feels like she won from experience. I'm not even sure why I'm still referring to her as a woman, as a human being. Because if Rob's description of her is any indication, she was something else. A full year passed by and I went through different partners. I was stationed in the same city, and sometimes my partner John and I had to report to calls that came from Cinder Valley. Eventually, I almost forgot about it all. But I never forgot about Rob, wherever he was, dead or alive. That didn't last long. One night, while sitting in our cruiser, John and I received a dispatch. It seemed like another ordinary call, until the operator mentioned something about a woman talking to herself on the street while carrying a baby in hand. It's J. Miles again, a cop with a useless English degree, here with another story. You may remember the last one. If you don't, then that's fine, as there's no need to read such stories in order. They are my foggy accounts of events that took place many decades ago. And while some are difficult to remember, others are quite clear and very memorable. My partner John and I were dispatched to a bar around 11:12 p.m. There's someone crying in the dumpster. That's what the caller told the operator. John lowered the passenger window and stuck his hand out as I reversed our cruiser from the diner. This is what we gotta cancel our lunch break for? I'm calling it now, just some drunk guy. We arrived at the bar and saw a woman waiting by the entrance, smoking a cigarette, her shoulders to her ears. She took a last puff and pressed it against a brick wall. "He's over there," she said, raising her chin towards the alleyway. "I just want to close the bar up and go home already. These homeless people, I don't have time for their games." John seemed to agree as he leaned against the cruiser, arms crossed, yawning. "Okay," he began. "We'll take it from here. Head on home, ma'am." As she walked back to her car, the woman stopped and looked back. "Oh, by the way, he keeps apologizing about something. I don't even know, fellas. Probably drunk, but very emotional about whatever he did." The streets and sidewalks were empty, except for stray cats and dogs and a skunk or two. The stench from that alleyway was like moldy cheese, not to mention alcohol and urine. It all comes with the job, of course. Would I prefer the title of FBI agent who battles white-collar crimes under the AC of his cubicle? Yes. But this job had thrills of its own, ones that never bore. I gave John a look. "You want to go in there, do your job?" "Me? Come on, officer," he joked. "You're supposed to take me under your wing. All those years of experience, I could learn a thing or two from your old ass." Okay, fair enough. Just thought your bald spot would reflect the moonlight and blind the suspect for us. Make our jobs a little easier, you know?" We made our way between the buildings, where there was only black. The sodium streetlights casted our shadows onto the wall, like a couple of armed men pursuing a burglar in a cartoon. John cursed when he stepped into a puddle and turned his flashlight around to the ground. "Wait," I said, my hand on his chest. "You hear that?" We listened in. Drops of water fell through a drain and splashed deep underground. A family of rats scratched somewhere in the corners. Crispy leaves brushed against the concrete. And a mysterious man sobbed. That woman was right. This man was sincere in his cries. We couldn't understand most of what he uttered, not least because he was hiding and speaking in gentle whispers. Still, the words, "I'm so sorry," and "God forgive me," were audible and repeated. There was something off about the man's voice. Perhaps it was sloshy because he was drunk. Each word was droopy, falling off his mouth like a bowling ball rolling off a cliff. I flashed my light his way and saw his hunched shadow, but not him. He pulled patches of hair from his head as he rocked back and forth on the ground, leaning his back on the dumpster. His cries and wails, although low, were the stuff of nightmares. They stiffened my bones, and put me on alert for any sudden movement on his part. And I could feel the same thing happening to John, who was following close behind. I tapped my shoes against the wet concrete. "Sir?" He ignored me and rambled on. "We got a call from a concerned citizen. Said someone was crying in the alleyway," I said. Still nothing. I looked over my shoulder. "Johnny boy, now's your chance. Go help the man and let's get out of here." John hesitated a moment, then flashed his light at the man and approached him, so that his back was to us, and we could see the missing hair from his head, but we still hadn't identified him. All the information he gave us was the constant apologies for some crime he claimed to have committed. "I'm so sorry. God, please forgive me." John squinted and leaned towards him. "You see that?" The man's earlobes dripped blood. Suddenly, a scream. Not from the man, but from across the alleyway by the park. We rushed towards it, leaving him behind. We ran towards what we believed was an actual emergency, an actual situation that needed our attention. But the truth was that my partner and I were glad to have an excuse to get the hell out of that alleyway, and as far as possible from that man. When we reached the park, we found a woman, panting and crying with a barking German Shepherd at her side. Her hands cupped her mouth and nose as she retreated from the dead body on the ground. Some poor old lady laid on the park pathway, her face missing. The jogging woman suddenly let out another blood-curdling scream as she jumped and pointed at someone behind us. It was the man. He followed us from the alleyway. And when we saw him, we knew why his words sounded sloshed and muffled. We knew why he apologized over and over again. We knew now what he had done.
"Please, I didn't mean to," he yelled, grabbing at his eyes and limping towards us.
The man had somehow stitched someone else's face over his own, and it looked like that of a woman's, an older one. We put two and two together and arrested him for the woman's murder. He cried and yelled and even charged at the paramedics, proclaiming his innocence even after confessing. He said he was forced to do what he did, claiming that if he hadn't, then the man in the sewer would come for him. When John and I finished our reports that night and got back into our cruiser, there was only silence. I knew then that he was a changed man, this rookie. Myself, not so much. But although I had experienced these things before, they never failed to petrify me. I knew of the sleepless nights to come from this experience. I gave John a lecture with the side of my eye as I turned the key and drove us out of there, opening his window for him. "Have some fresh air, buddy." But he was expressionless. And with each streetlight we drove under, I saw the sweat on his forehead and around his eyes. I didn't tell John what I'm about to tell you. He wouldn't have been able to handle it. When we finally got into the cruiser and reversed out of there, I saw something. John couldn't get in the car and slam on the door quick enough. But I took my time and by doing so, witnessed it. As I put my hand on the driver's side door to open it, I caught a glow in the distance. Down the street, I saw a pair of glowing eyes descend into the ground, back into the sewer, closing the gap over itself. Well, I hope that everybody enjoyed the police encounter stories tonight. If you want more horrifying tales, make sure to click on the video that you see on your screen now.